A pleasant good day, everyone. I am Kingsley James. And this morning, I have another one for you. My Staff Motivator Series, The Staff Room, Episode 4. Despite what is happening around the world, it is a brand new day. Let us give God praise, for this is a day that He has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Yes, as I said, in our Staff Motivator Series, Episode 4, this morning we're looking at the chain of command in an organization. First off, you have your line staff, supervisors, and managers. And I'm getting straight to the point here. But your line staff, supervisors, and managers, that's like the basic as how basic it can get in any organization. Of course, the organizations that might have middle managers, they might have supervisors over the supervisors and shift supervisors and so, but I'm just using that to bring home a point of what I want to make. You might ask, you know, where am I going with this morning? Yeah? Because a chain of command is there to be used and not just there as like a dolly house. It is not just there as an ornament to put on a mantle, but it is to be used, and not just used, but used properly. And we're going to get down right down to business, right? And I'm speaking of myself too, because I've made the same mistakes over the years, which had proved detrimental or prove not going, it actually made the working environment a little harder to be in when you do what I'm about to speak about. Now, it is never a good practice for any member of staff to bypass a level, a management level, and then you head straight to the highest level. If you are disgruntled about anything, it is always best to speak to the person directly over you before you move up the ladder, right? If you do not get any redress from the person directly over you, then of course you take it up a notch. But it's like you want to go to the court. You just don't go straight to the CCJ. That's just it. Let's just use the CCJ this morning, yeah? Take off the wigs of our colonial slave masters. Anyway, let's get back to the point. Do not stray, right? So, your shift, if you have a problem and you report it to the shift supervisor, then the shift supervisor will report it to the main supervisor, and so on and so forth. It doesn't really make any sense to break any chain of command in your business, because you are doing yourself a disservice. It's like you feel you're big and you're bad, and you could just do what you want, so you just go straight because you feel you do not have any confidence in the person right over you, so you just go straight to the top. And most of the time, the people that do that, they figure that they are doing their job so well that they want to suck up to the boss, they want to suck up to the manager, and they feel as if no wrong can be found in them, which is not right, because the Bible says there's none who do good, not even one. Another thing is that when you go straight to top management, right? Top management, if you go to them with a complaint or grievance, more often than not, they will still come down the chain and end up at your immediate supervisor level so that they can get clarification based on the issue that you have. They must, because let's say they're not involved in the day-to-day running of the business per se, is like they're not on the ground. So when you leave your immediate supervisor with a grievance and you go right up to the top, they will still come down. So does it really make sense to just bypass the supervisor right over you and go right to the top? No, it does not make sense. Now, nobody in an organization wins when they don't follow the rules. If you don't follow the rules of going up the chain of command, you cannot win. There's no way you can win with that. You might not have trust in the person placed directly above you, but that's just it. You might not have trust, but you have to learn to deal with it. And if you don't have trust with the person that is placed directly above you, then you do not need to be in that organization. I know there are many times in organizations you can't trust anybody, but what I'm saying is this is who you have to work with. And if you cannot work with that person, then there are only two options to do, is either you learn how to deal with that person or you just leave the job. And that is all I have to say about this issue today. So you go on your merry way. May God's richest blessings be upon you. May he cause his face to shine upon you. And everything that you put your hands to today, I pray that it will bring you success. This has been another one of my Staff Motivator series, The Staff Room. I am Kingsley James. Stay tuned for the BBC News.
Iran had promised harsh revenge, but not given the time frame. In the end, Operation Mata Soleimani, in retaliation for the assassination of its Quds general, came quickly in a salvo of missiles on air bases housing American forces in Iraq. Missiles launched from inside Iran struck two air bases in Erbil and Al-Assad, just west of Baghdad. Iran says 80 American terrorists were killed. But President Trump tweeted that all was well and said casualties and damage were being assessed. He'll make a statement at the White House later. But does this draw a line under hostilities going forward? Our Middle East editor Jeremy Bowen is in Baghdad.
Iran had been threatening severe retaliation and the missiles were fired just after midnight. The Iranians seem to be trying to calibrate their response to satisfy fury at home and not to provoke President Trump into a particularly destructive military retaliation. The Iranian Foreign Minister, Javad Zarif, said in a tweet, that's the battleground for this diplomacy at the moment, that Iran's actions were rooted in international law, in Article 51 of the UN Charter, which deals with a state's right to self-defense. He seemed, in that tweet, to be trying to draw a line under retaliation. But then quite a different message came from Ayatollah Khamenei, Iran's supreme leader. He was speaking in Qom, a holy city in Iran, and he seemed to suggest that the night's attacks were not enough.
Revenge, that's something else. What happened last night was just a slap in the face. That's something else.
The Ayatollah said the corrupting presence of the United States had to be removed from the region. The crowd chanted, God is greatest and death to America. Even if this is the beginning of the end of the crisis caused by the assassination, the long-term conflict between Iran and the US continues to edge towards war. And that process won't stop without some kind of diplomacy leading to a political deal. There seemed to be one back in 2015 when they signed the Iran nuclear agreement, but President Trump pulled out of that a couple of years ago, and since then, this crisis has grown and grown. There remains a really serious danger of war. This remains one of the world's most dangerous and unstable conflicts.
Jeremy Byrne, our Middle East editor, speaking to us from Baghdad. Well, in the past few hours, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has demanded, as we heard, the United States leave the Middle East. He had this to say about the attack itself.
Revenge, that's something else. What happened last night was just a slap in the face. That's something else.
Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Let's speak to our security correspondent Frank Gardner. As Jeremy was saying, Frank, I mean, slightly different messages coming from the Supreme Leader and from Iran's Foreign Minister. What are you reading to that?
Well, really, I think it's symptomatic of the two Irans. There is what I call the front of house, the fairly sort of emollient statements, relatively mild and moderate, coming from people like the Foreign Minister, Javad Zarif, who says, you know, we've concluded this, let's draw a line on this, that's the end of it. But the deep state, the security, intelligence and Revolutionary Guards establishment in Iran, the hardliners, they're not going to let it rest there. What we've seen now is the end of phase one. This is the overt Iranian response, very much for domestic consumption. There we've hit a slap in the face to America, we've punished them. The domestic narrative is that 80 Americans have been killed. I don't think anything like that is true. We haven't even heard of any casualties. But that isn't the end of it. Over the next few weeks and months, they will continue to harass and harry US forces in the region, not just in Iraq, but in other places as well. And the aim being to drive the US out of the wider Middle East, but particularly out of Iraq and Syria, clearing a way for a swathe of Iranian-dominated territory all the way from the Afghan border to the Mediterranean coast.
What's striking, though, in the immediate aftermath, President Trump's tweet, pretty neutral, really. I mean, things seemed okay. You know, he's going to speak in a few hours' time. It's as if both sides are trying to keep a lid on this. I mean, is that your sense as well? I mean, is there any suggestion that America could have been tipped off about this?
There's no suggestion, but I think it's perfectly possible. I mean, it is extraordinary that 22 ballistic missiles, and these are powerful missiles, accurate as well, could be aimed directly at two bases housing coalition and, you know, US and other forces, and yet there's not a single casualty reported. It's extraordinary. So if you look as well at the attack that took place in Saudi Arabia in September, 25 missiles, cruise and drones, hit precise bits of machinery in the Saudi oil refinery infrastructure that crippled that output. Knocked out half the output in just the space of a few minutes. So when the Iranians want to do something, I mean, they denied that. They say it was the Houthis, but most experts say the Houthis weren't capable of doing that. When the Iranians want to do something, they're pretty accurate. They think very carefully about it. And remember that the Quds force that Qasem Soleimani commanded, this is their bread and butter. This is what they do. They are expert at covert operations and military operations, very carefully planned, often deniable, what's called black ops.
What should we read into the fact also that the hard lines of the Revolutionary Guard have admitted being behind this? Because that is new, isn't it? Because normally this has all been played out in some sort of shadowy proxy fight.
I think there is an acceptance in Washington that, given the massive impact that the killing of Qasem Soleimani has had on Iran and the huge crowds, the outpouring of not just grief but calls for vengeance that we saw, they had to do something pretty big and overt and say, yes, we've struck back at it. So, yes, you're right. It's unusual. It's exceptional for them to do it. I don't think we're going to see, unless there is an American retaliation, I doubt we're going to see another overt Iranian attack. But we will see some mysterious attacks that properly have the hand of Iran behind them. But it's be hard to actually pin it to its door.
OK, right. So, Frank, for now, thank you very much indeed.